Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Yeah.
But don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia.
This is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman back with you for another incredible hour here on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show at PRN. We got two gargantuan things to talk about today. Everybody's talking about the virus, but we're going to start, before we do, we're joined by my co-conspirators, three of my co-conspirators, Joel Siegel. Joel and I have a piece up that's gone viral at Truth Out about the coronavirus and Donald Trump's culpability, among other things. Bob Petrakis, my longtime co-conspirator on election protection and many, many other issues, and Steve Rosenfeld, a regular on the show, talking about voting and voting machines and things like that. So what we're going to do is, because I know once we get into the virus, we're not going to stop. So I want to, before we lose track, we are in the middle of an election, and nobody knows more about the Michigas, that's the best word I can use, with our voting machines in this country than Steve Rosenfeld. And Steve has been traveling around inspecting the craziness at the various polling places. And so before we get into this apocalyptic event being sponsored by Donald Trump, the coronavirus, I do want to have some time. And, of course, Bob Petrakis and Joel Siegel are also experts in this. But, Steve, you're the one who's been traveling around, and your reports have been brilliant and unique. I don't think anyone else, you and John Brakey, besides you two, have been traveling the circuit to see the quality of the voting experience, shall we put it that way, in 80s terms. What has been happening, Steve Rosenfeld, with our in these primaries with the voting machines?
Well, a lot of what's been happening is new systems, meaning new ways to check people in, to register for political party, to register to vote the same day, and then to cast a ballot, are being introduced. And in many places, different aspects of these systems, you know, the sort of like turning points, if you will, or pinch points, the turning points have become pinch points, where things have broken down, or there have been unanticipated delays, or there weren't enough machines deployed, or the way that people were anticipating the turnout didn't go as anticipated. And you've seen on the front end of the process long lines. That's what you've seen the most media reports about.
Where have these lines been primarily?
Well, the longest timeline people have left waited in line has been in Texas. And we're talking about Houston, Dallas, up to 7 hours.
Oh, God. You got to be kidding me.
Now, but I got to tell you, it's not just there. I mean, in these, so you might say, oh, let's blame the Republicans because it's Texas, and you might as well, but it's actually a little more complicated than that, because there they have really strange rules where the voting machines and primaries are allocated based on, like, by party. So if the Republicans don't hold a primary, they still get to, like, hang on to half the machines. And then for the Democrats are under-resourced. And then you know, just goes, this crazy stuff, it spirals downward from there. But in other places where the Democratic Party is running, was running their own the caucuses, and they were running the early voting, like any primary-type election, you had lines that were 2 and 3 hours. So there's something that's bigger.
Well, even that is insane, a two-hour wait.
Yeah,
I mean, why should you have to wait 2 hours to vote?
There's something that's bigger that's going on here, and I think what's happening is that I've seen in most places voters and poll workers behave pretty well. Not too many people get upset. People just sort of, you know, bearing it with a certain amount of dignity and patience. But basically, the technology that is being handed out and is being deployed, it's really not up to the level of the task, of whether the importance of it or the reliability of it. And basically, the folks that are voting and a lot of the poll workers are being squeezed from both sides. And the sides that they're being squeezed from are the people who are providing this technology and the people who are buying it and the consultants who are working with it to sort of – and it's just a lousy pattern we're seeing. Now, I should just step back and say these lines have come when you have seen turnouts between 20 and 30%. That's definitely going to be at least half and maybe – you know, somewhere between a half and a third of what we would expect to see in the fall. So this is really, you know, I'm not being paranoid here. These are facts. That's not a good sign.
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I mean, you would think that a nation, you know, I hate to sound cliched here, but that we should be able to figure out how to vote. But, you know, the line that we've seen develop, I mean, as a historian, the pattern is that the Democrats in the primaries are the ones who are suppressing the vote among people of color and youth, because they want the Joe Bidens of the world to win these nominations. And then this fall, it's the Republicans who take over, and they do the suppressing because they want the Donald Trumps of the world to win the presidency.
Well, I didn't see that. I didn't see that in Michigan, Harvey. I mean, what I saw in Michigan,
okay,
which is basically, they had one of the highest turnout elections that you know, primaries that they've had in you know, many, many years. And the reasons for that were not just because of the interest in voting this year. It's because the state recently passed, or it was by initiative and referendum, same-day registration, no-excuse absentee ballots, which means you can literally just request one. You don't have to give a reason why and satisfy some standard, like, or you have a religious objection or you're sick or something like that. And so they had super high turnout as a result. The thing that is baffling to me, and I've seen this in whether it was Detroit or Los Angeles, or this is similarly true whether it's Las Vegas and Reno or Des Moines, even New Hampshire, at a certain point, the counting of the ballots shifts from a paper-based record to an electronic process, and then it's like all the windows go dark. And you know, this is what Bob has always talked about, saying, you know, we have faith-based elections, and the difference now between now and when we first started talking about this, which was scarily 15 years ago, is that we have new technology on these machines that are keeping much more detailed records of the voting, of the ballots, of the performance of the machines, literally minute by minute. But nobody has access to this stuff. And
that's amazing.
And so not only do they not have access of this stuff to ascertain where the breakdowns are in the machines that are failing or are spitting out ballots or getting jammed, they also don't have access to the records of how the counts are being done. But the data is there. We're just not getting to see it in a timely way, and timely means, you know, while votes are being counted. And that's the other half of what I've seen out there.
Well, isn't there a place where they had a whole bunch of votes on thumb drives and they misplaced the thumb drives?
Dallas.
I mean, you know, come on. It's like that election in Wisconsin a few years ago where they defeated Scott Walker, the horrible Koch brother fascist, for governor, and then all of a sudden a poll worker turns up with a laptop that has a bunch of votes on it, and they put him back. I mean, how that went down is still beyond me. Bob Fitrakis, you're in Ohio. What's going on there with voting?
Well, yeah, it's Ohio, so some of the counties are competent, some aren't. We've got, you know, six major voting systems. There's no one statewide system. Some are better than others. There's one county, Lake County, up in the north that went surprisingly by a large margin, you know, 16 or so points, to Donald Trump. But it also has these old Ivotronic. It's the only one left in the state, what we used to call flipper, because they wouldn't even hide the fact you'd see the vote flip in front of you. So most of them bought new machines, but some of the machines are better than others. I just did a long article on sort of the major machines. Probably the best are the ES&S that feed into their precinct tabulator, you know, the DS200. But you can actually vote by a touchscreen, and the machine will mark the ballot for you, occasionally wrong. But it's good on the undervote and the overvote. So my county, Franklin County's got, you know, decent equipment, except they won't save the digital images, which are set up right now in the machines. You've got this massive security system for auditing and adjudication. And in Ohio, there was a court case. Sadly, I don't know how I lost it. I don't think the judge was real tech savvy. But they left it up to the counties whether they want to turn on the electronic security features or not. So these things are, it's like going out and buying a state-of-the-art security system all over your house with cameras, can see everything, and then you turn it off. I mean, why would you do that unless you wanted the joint robbed?
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Joel Siegel, you're in North Carolina. You got anything to report there on the state of the voting machines?
Look, besides the fact that, you know, the court made an actual ruling that made sense, which was our voter ID was surgical in terms of racism, and it was the voter suppression tactic of voter ID was overturned, which is a very good thing. But then, as Bob Fratricus points out, and you, Harvey, and all your great work, there's 17 million people been purged from the voting roll since 2014, mostly Black and Hispanic. I don't think North Carolina has, kind of like Trump, there's no emergency preparedness program for the outbreak of voter suppression, purging and cross-checking and voter ID and closing down African-American polling sites early. You know, when I went to go vote, they actually had paper ballots, which I was shocked, because that's something that I've been working on for many years. But there is this national conference that we're having in Charlotte, North Carolina, with Jesse Jackson, Barbara Onwan, many others, to Bob Fratricus, to bring all the groups and organizations working on voter suppression and getting out the vote, to coordinate a strategy, you know, to crush voter suppression and to ramp up the vote. That's the most exciting thing that's happening in North Carolina, is the epicenter of many coalitions, Poor People's Campaign, climate change, this idea of a coordinated movement to crush voter suppression. But also we include in the summit discussions on how we deal with election integrity, making sure that our voting machines don't flip, making sure that, you know, we go to paper ballots instead of to electronic touch screens, which don't work. Making sure that the idea of proprietary software, right? I mean, that's insane. We're going to deal with all that in a fusion movement. So it won't just be machines or voter suppression. It's going to be a fusion election protection, protect our vote movement. So it's very exciting. Jesse Jackson has been phenomenal. Barbara Online's been phenomenal. And
you'll have to.
Yeah, go ahead.
You'll have to invite Steve Rosenfeld also. So, Steve, Where are you going next, depending on the coronavirus, of course, to check on the voting machines?
Well, I'm not sure. I have to, you know, that's a really big question. The obvious place to go would be down to Phoenix, where John Brakey is, because that's next week, next Tuesday. But we'll have to see. It's really an interesting question, because there they have vote centers, which basically are these hubs where larger numbers of people can go, and then regardless of, instead it replaces having to go to a precinct where people, if they go to the wrong precincts, can either be told to go to the right ones, or they can vote there because they insist, and then their votes don't get counted, which was, you know, we saw in Ohio a number of years ago. So we'll see. I think it's too late for them to institute some kind of a change. Even though something like 60 to 80% of the state votes by mail, there still will be thousands of people. And this was the vote centers when they debuted in 2016 in Mariposa County were one of the big screw ups that hurt the Sanders campaign. It caused the longtime administrator there, Helen Purcell, to lose her job. And what happened there was a lot of what we've been seeing happen this year. Too many systemic changes have been instituted in too high stakes of a contest, and people just, you know, they just were being people. They just didn't know the processes. They didn't behave as was assumed, and things got bogged down badly. And
I got to say, I had a very easy experience. Unlike Ohio 2004, where they denied me my ballot, and I wound up being a plaintiff in a federal lawsuit that Bob Fetrakis was the attorney, and we won. Here in California, I got an absentee ballot, which I requested, and it actually had all the candidates on it, amazingly enough. I filled it out. I went in on Sunday to the vote center, and it took me 30 seconds to seal the ballot, sign it, and drop it in the box. Then I saw on Tuesday that the same vote center I went to had, like, many, many hours of lines. And we had Greg Palast on the show last week, and he was claiming that Alex Padilla, the Secretary of State of California, denied 500,000 likely Bernie voters and 300,000 likely Bloomberg voters the ability to vote because of the screw-ups. I mean, you would think at this point in our history that we would finally figure out how to do elections. But, you know, Bob, what is the when does Ohio vote, or did they vote?
Oh, no, we're voting on Tuesday.
This Tuesday. And
yeah.
I assume you're going to be – I guess they don't really care at this point if the Democrats, if Bernie or Biden win. But
I think they care a lot in terms of putting a stake in Bernie's heart, so he doesn't come back after him again. And you know, if it's always a toss of the dice, it's late at night and you make Biden talk too long, so. I think they'd like, to end this. But we've already had early voting, and I've already reported on voting while Somali. As you know how Ohio works, the major cities have a Democratic Party machine, sort of like the new high-tech Tammany. And in this case, the Somali people weren't taking the sample ballot card from the Democrats, in part because they had one of their own running, and in part because they love Bernie, particularly on the issue of health care. And so they were told that unless they pronounced their address in an understandable manner in English, that they couldn't vote. So they were turning away scores of Somali voters, particularly elderly Somali first-generation immigrants. So I had to call up and threaten a lawsuit. One of the Bernie Field people got a hold of me. So a new crime will be voting while Somali.
Unbelievable.
And we have the second largest Somali community in America. You know, we got more than 30,000 Somali voters there.
Wow.
And they were all for Bernie, is that it?
Yeah. They weren't taking the Democratic Party sample ballot with Biden on it.
Well, I have to say, and since we're going to segue over to the coronavirus in a minute, but I want to put my two cents worth in here is that the reason Biden beat Bernie is in these primaries has nothing to do with the issues. And I have to say, I got to tell you that I have always thought that Tom Friedman was a number of words that I'm not going to say on the air here. Thomas Friedman from the New York Times, I think, is the biggest bozo. But he topped himself this week. He wrote a column about Bernie versus Biden that was absolutely the biggest piece of garbage I have ever read. I mean, he claimed all sorts of things that Bernie was allegedly saying that he wasn't saying, complete inaccuracies about the systems in Scandinavia. I mean, this last column by Tom Biden, Tom Friedman, Tom Biden Friedman. I got to tell you, and it just topped them all. And the New York Times is running on the front page right now. I'm looking at it that Biden gave a big speech, criticizing Trump's response to the coronavirus, but doesn't mention that Bernie also gave a speech. Bernie's speech is at Huffington. So, I guess that's part of the divide here. Steve Rosenfeld, do you think, let's talk real quickly now. We want to get into the stripping of the voter rolls before we go to the coronavirus. Steve, I know that's not exactly your beat, but have you followed the voter roll stripping in this primary season?
Yeah, somewhat. And I've followed it somewhat in Georgia. I've followed it somewhat in Wisconsin. And, what ends up happening here are several things simultaneously, and they get blurred. You have to update voter rolls so that they more or less are not out of date. So you can basically, that's a legitimate function. But the way that that's done, let me put it this way, the way that that's abused, and, you saw this in Ohio, and this was the case that went to the Supreme Court, and basically the state Republicans won. The way that it's abused is that you cite these ambiguities in federal law that allow you to remove infrequent voters very aggressively. There's no requirement that it has to be done. So in the past, we've seen, and in a couple places in this year, with Wisconsin being the most aggressive example, you've seen partisan Republicans try to make the case that because there's some glitch in data, which is to say somebody's name is spelled with a capital or not a capital or a space or not a space on a voter registration record and it's not the same on a driver's license record, that all of a sudden that person is gone. They're done. They're out. And so what's happened is you've got that going on in Georgia to some extent, Wisconsin, to a larger extent. And the question is maybe in a couple other places too. But it's mostly always in the states that are targeted as being swing states or the swing districts in those states. And it just continues. It's not a new story. It just continues. And without getting down the rabbit hole of this thing, it's a real issue. And the biggest thing I can tell you about it or tell listeners about it is the way it's abused from a partisan perspective is you have these enforcement actions that people say must be done now when, in fact, there's nothing in law that requires it to be that aggressive and that fast.
Bob Fitrakis, what are you seeing in Ohio this year?
Oh, I couldn't hear what Steve was saying. What am I looking at?
Steve was saying stripping the voter rolls. I think they set a new record.
Well, we already had the mass purge of 485,000 voters first in January, about 250,000, then another 235,000. And immediately came out that 20% of them were absolutely living at the same address and it was just a mistake. I would point out they were disproportionately from Democratic, you know, highly producing Democratic areas.
Now, if people are stripped from the voter roll, can they re-register?
Well, no. I mean, unless you met the deadline. We were telling people, we're having a problem with people that are registering and they're actually taking pictures of their registration online. And for some reason, reports that the registration just disappears, you know, some sort of glitch within the system. Others suspect somebody wrote an algorithm, but it's almost like the random elimination of voters. You recall you were one of those.
I was one. I'm not so sure it was random. That's the point.
Well, no, I mean, no. It appears not to be random. It appears to happen right, as it did in 2004, where you 25% of the city of Cleveland, 24.96 to be exact, were removed from the voting rolls. But Ohio has the most stringent voter purging of any state, and it makes no sense since we're an ID state. You know, no one's really going to sneak in and vote. You have to produce ID as to where you live. So I don't know why they're trying to remove people who, after not voting in two federal elections, even if they voted in state or local elections, why they're trying to remove them when they have to show ID.
Unbelievable. Joel Siegel, you got anything to say about North Carolina? Then, Steve, I'll give you a last word, and we're going to jump into the coronavirus here. Joel, has there been a big stripping of the voter rolls in North Carolina? Joel Siegel?
Yeah, 576,534 votes were purged in the North Carolina voter rolls, and they did it at a time, it was like during a vacation period, so people wouldn't, you know, notice it, right? It was done during the holidays where there would be few new people registering to vote, because the previous purges took place over several weeks. So every county except Yancey County, they saw a decrease in registration numbers from December 29th to January 5th. So the previous purges took place over several weeks, but as with the prior purges, it will take some time for voter registration to reach its pre-purge level, right? So the number of registered voters in the state did not fully recover from the early 2017 voter roll purges until late June of 2018. And no one can convince me that this is not a pernicious, evil attempt by the far-right wing of the Republican Party to suppress black and Hispanic voters so the Republicans can win their election. And I think, Harvey, that there is going to be a 50-state strategy, as you predicted. But who in the hell has ever heard of 576,534 voters gone from the voting rolls, and they did it in 1 week? And there needs to be an investigative reporter like Bob Petrakis, to cover this, to find out what happened, who's been purged, and is there a pattern of discrimination.
All right, we'll have to do a major piece on this. Steve, you have a last word before we jump into the virus here?
Well, those numbers are not that those numbers are not as unusual as you might think, even though they're kind of shockingly large. So, Joel, so when was the last time they did a mass purge in North Carolina? Because I don't know, but do you?
Joel Siegel, Steve asked you if when the last time there was a mass purge. When was this most recent purge?
2019.
And before that?
2019 they did it. Okay. And they North Carolina apparently purged more people than even Ohio did.
Well, the question is how many of those people really legitimately, you know, were those who moved out of state or moved in state versus how many people are infrequent voters and how many people are being targeted because of, you know, typos, you know, in government records. And, you know, but we know in some states that they're super, super aggressive. You know, Ohio, North Carolina, you know, our Georgia are the base and followed, I guess, this year by Wisconsin, have been, you know, the most egregious. Texas is also pretty bad, but those numbers are not that unusual. I mean, we do have a country with like a 10% mobility rate, so, and that's what in part generates large numbers. But that's not to say the partisan stuff doesn't go on, because obviously it clearly does. But it you know, it's all of that churns and generates these large numbers.
Well, clearly we have a country where black people, Hispanics, and young people seem to move and get purged more than the rest of us. Steve Rosenfeld, thank you so much for being with us. How do people get a hold of you? Steve?
Yes, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you. How do people get a hold of you?
Well, my stuff is, Stephen with a V at ind.media. And my stuff is published on a bunch of different websites. Probably Salon is the most is best known.
And what is your most recent piece?
The most recent one I did took a look at you know this pattern of machine breakdowns and lines and what efforts are being made to understand what was going on and fix it for the fall in all the first you know months worth of primaries and caucuses, and the next ones are going to be about. You know, what I saw in Michigan. And
all right, well, we look forward to that. Thank you so much for being with us, Steve Rosenfeld. We appreciate it. And, we'll, of course, you're a regular on the show, so we'll have you back again soon.
Thank you, guys. Bye now.
Take care. All right, let's get into the biggie now, the coronavirus catastrophe. Joel Siegel and I have a major piece up at Truthout, which appears to be going all over the Internet. And we see Joe, it's interesting, we see Joe Biden on the front page of the New York Times giving a speech about what Trump can do, and then Bernie Sanders simultaneously giving a speech which does not appear in the New York Times and is buried, but at least it's there at Huffington. So, Joel, let's talk. Well, actually, let me start with Bob. Bob, we were having a discussion about you coming on before, and let's deal with this issue of the origin of the coronavirus. Oh my God, I'm just looking at the Huffington Post. They have canceled March Madness. They have canceled the Final Four, the basketball tournament. I think that's the first time in history. That is absolutely unbelievable. Jeez. I mean, you know it's serious when they cancel March Madness. I mean, what, that must be billions of dollars in revenues, my God. Bob Fitrakis, you have a theory about the origin of the coronavirus. You want to share it with us?
Well, I think we should investigate, primarily because Rush Limbaugh put it forward. But again, you know, the Wuhan is the area where it's been well established that the biochemical warfare division of the People's Republic of China is. So the question with the high contagion rate and the high rate of fatalities could have been something weaponized, as it's pretty well established that the ticks were altered that led to Lyme disease here. But all these major superpowers have biochemical warfare, and on occasion they get out. And in the U.S., where you recall, they sent militarized anthrax through the mail. I thought that was William Patrick III. So when you say Wuhan and a virus, it's like saying Battelle, you know, out of Columbus, which handles all the biochemical warfare for the United States. So I think it's something that should be looked at.
Well, let's talk about some of these epidemics we've had, Joel Siegel. We had AIDS. A lot of people, there was a lot of conspiracy talk about AIDS having been manufactured in the weapons labs. We had SARS. We had swine flu. And now we've got this one. I've seen a lot of stuff on the Internet claiming that this is a weaponized virus, that it was created at Fort Detrick or some other American weapons lab, and that the Chinese wound up with it. We know that Wuhan is a center for biological warfare. What do you think about that, Joel Siegel?
Well, what, I was one of the lead staffers on global HIV/AIDS, the pandemic. And there were pretty credible scientists that I dealt with and epidemiologists who really felt strongly that AIDS was definitely the origin was from U.S. military that got out of hand. And the other theories were it was either a baboon that infected a Belgian missionary either through biting or, I hate to say this, or through intercourse, and, you know, it's just really kind of gross. But in terms of the coronavirus, in terms of its origins, all we know is that apparently, and I'm not an expert, you know, I'm not a scientist, but it did come from pigs. But the question is, how did the pigs get the virus? So, you know, the jury's out on who you know, how this originated. But what I think is the salient question is, that I know you're going to get to, is what's the Trump administration's response, which has been an overall failure, both in his cuts to the CDC, his suggested 16% cut to the CDC, his firing of people in the National Security Council who work on this issue, his overall lack of response, unlike Singapore and other countries in Asia, Hong Kong, that made sure they had mandatory testing and quarantines. And he focused on containment from other countries, but he cut the positions of so many people at the CDC that it's hard for them to test. You know, they don't have the testing kits. You know, and Singapore and Hong Kong, they sent testing kits to every public hospital and every hospital there was, and we're not doing that, so we don't even really know how many numbers, you know, there are. But most scientists predict it is going to get worse. New Rochelle, New York quarantined. What you just said about the NCAA, that's really scary. I mean, we're supposed to do a conference on with Bob Petraeus, you know, coming, and wow, you know, really, it's really scary what's happening here. But Trump administration is absolutely abysmal, and we've never seen anything like it in our lives, his failure, you know, to even respond in an appropriate manner. And it's one of the reasons why we got to get him out.
Well, I just saw a portion of a debate. Representative Katie Porter, who was just elected here in California, was grilling the guy from the CDC and asked him if he would commit to making sure that all testing was free. And he wouldn't do it. And Joel, you and I, in our piece at Truthout, tell us, this person, is this your brother-in-law went to get tested?
My sister wasn't feeling well. She went to the doctor and said, I'd like to test for corona virus. And she has insurance, Obamacare, and they said it's $500. Now, if that's how much we're talking about, $500, you know how many people will not get tested? And then the question becomes, how much money is going to be appropriated by Congress, right, that Trump will actually sign on his, you know, desk? Originally, it was a $2.5 billion increase. Schumer said it needed to be more like $8.5 billion. But their budget is $8.5 billion, but it's over a period of years, where Schumer is saying, no, we need $8.5 billion now. So, you know, Donald Trump is what I call Donald Oz. He makes you think that everything is fine in Oz, but you got to look deeper, you know, in the poppy fields and see what he's up to. He suggested a 16% cut in the CDC several days after the coronavirus had exploded in Italy. We're looking at an absolute disaster and unprecedented death rates because of the lack of planning and the complete incompetence of this bozo who happens to be our president.
So when the coronavirus hit, he proposed a cut to the budget of the Center for Disease Control.
Yes, 16% cut.
Unbelievable.
What kind of president would ever do such a stupid, irresponsible, immoral, and unethical cut in the midst of the coronavirus? First, he said it was a hoax that the Democrats have promulgated so, you know, to make sure they would win and he would lose. But according to top people, former Obama administration officials, that when you're in meetings with Trump, you have to agree with him, and if you disagree with him, you'll pay the price, like get fired. So the problem is he put Pence in charge. What does Pence know? What does Pence know about the coronavirus? And some of the top scientists who were at the CDC, their jobs were eliminated, according to Adam Schiff, because of deep cuts to the CDC. So you can't, they can't respond to it. And they eliminated a program in the NSC, which deals with, you know, pandemics. So, because you need a global response, right? You're dealing with people coming in here from other countries. So,
when did they did they eliminate that program with the National Security Council?
I think it was 2 years ago.
And Trump did it. Trump eliminated
Trump,
the program.
Trump did it. Yeah, Trump cut that. You know, this is an unbelievably important program. You know, that he cut, and it was called. It's a USAID program called PREDICT. It was shuttered, and that's what you do to improve the detection of they call it zoonotic viruses like corona. I mean, this is ridiculous because we just had the Ebola crisis, and before that, the AIDS pandemic. So you wouldn't want to, you know, I worked in government, federal government for 13 years and local for over 20. What you do is you bolster those budgets. You don't reduce them. But people got to remember, Trump's the tip of the iceberg. That's the Republican, you know, idiots in the how. I shouldn't say that, but I have to call them idiots because I worked with them for many years. I wouldn't allow them to be idiots. I call them idiots now. They're idiots in the House and the Senate who don't read. Their staff don't read. They're not sophisticated, and they want to give tax cuts to the rich. It's just that simple. That's all it is. They want to give tax cuts to the rich. And that's part of the tax cuts for the rich. Cut the CDC and cut USAID program. And it's
well,
really,
you
got to
send
know,
me
Joel.
You got
yeah,
Joel. You got to send me a list of the programs that Trump and the Republicans have cut, and Bob too. I do want to say that Mike Pence, I think, is appropriate because he has a deeply held belief that the way the coronavirus is spread is if a married man has lunch with an unmarried woman without his wife present. I think that's the number one way that the coronavirus is spread. Don't you agree, Bob?
Absolutely. And even worse, the death rate goes up if a man, look at a man.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So
if a man lieth with another man, you mean like the Bible?
Yes.
It lieth.
Does the coronavirus?
No, he doesn't even have to lie. All he's got to do is glance over.
And then you can stone them to death, and that's perfectly okay.
That's right. Well, we've had a lot of people stoned in this country, but it's a different use of the word. So,
Including myself, age 12 to 17.
Well, I understand that Governor Mike DeWine of Ohio has now shut all the schools for 3 weeks. Is that true?
Yeah, correct. I was just watching it a few hours ago. Every college is shut. All the public ones are all shut. We're now teaching online, Harvey, so something that'd be close to your heart.
Yeah. Well, of course, that's another dream come true for the Republicans, is to shut all the universities and the colleges. I mean, they don't want people.
Liberal incubators.
Yeah. Right. So, here's another question, since I have a longtime congressional aide and a political scientist. What is the likelihood that Trump is going to use this pandemic to declare martial law and make himself a formal dictator?
Well, I think
Bob?
He's been fantasizing that for the last 4 years as he, you know, met with Putin behind closed doors. You know what? I wouldn't put it past him because he does see himself as a dictator. And what I do think is going to happen, though, is if whoever's the nominee, whether it's Sanders or Biden, they should run 1,000 commercials, Bloomberg and Steyer pay for it, first showing Trump saying that coronavirus is a hoax, and then, you know, blaming him for deaths and the spread because of these cuts. And they're going to have to go after him because swing voters, independents, Republicans want to live too. and they have grandparents, and I think this is his absolute Achilles heel. And, you know, this is where the Trump presidency falters. You can't – it's hard to manipulate data of people who are dead or infected because you didn't have an appropriate response medically because, you know, you wanted tax cuts for the rich instead of putting money into the CDC or USAID. Because, you know,
of course
I do feel sorry for a lot of the rich, because if you only have 3 yachts and 6 Mercedes, you really need more yachts and Mercedes and paintings in your house, because let's face it, the rich are going through a very hard time.
Yeah, well, the rich, the number one indicator of the seriousness of the coronavirus has been the stock market. And I'm looking today, here's the headline in the New York Times. A banner headline across the front page: U.S. stocks have their worst day since 1987 crash. Now that's after all the other. I mean, the S&P 500 is down 27%, and the Dow is down 28% since February 12th. And I guarantee you that is Donald Trump does not care about people dropping dead or the schools closing, which I'm sure he likes. He probably had money on the Final Four, but you know this is where it's at, is the stock market, and this is unprecedented. Worst day since 1987. That's what is that? That's 33 years already. So this is a serious deal. Bob, where do you see this going now with the coronavirus? Trump has really made himself look really bad, but he still, you know, can be the president and declare martial law. I'm sure Putin is counseling him on exactly how to do it.
Well, also, you know, if it's close election and he loses, he'll claim it's stolen. I mean, and there's a hardcore 33%. Around the old Nazi number that, you know, are out there believing like Trump, you know, they're anti-intellectual, they're anti-science. Of course, you know, they'd be willing to back their guy staying in times of crisis. All over the internet on the right-wing blogs, they're talking about how this is the deep state trying to take down their guy because he was doing such a great job. But the amazing thing is Mike DeWine comes out with his scientists, with his medical people, and they drive the policy. DeWine, you know, is an absolutely rational and cautious man. And then you see who's taken over the Republican Party, anti-science. It's, you know, I rate this up there with mass deaths when Stalin put Lysenko in charge of Soviet agriculture.
Right. I mean, this is really truly amazing. And yeah, John, you know, they keep calling out John Kasich on TV, and I don't know what he said about Trump's speech, but there was a big argument about it.
There's some discussion that Kasich is the guy Biden would pick from the Republican Party.
Oh, please. Yeah, he definitely would pick. Yeah, but, you know, God help us. It's amazing how much good press Elizabeth Warren has been getting. I'm sure in the back of their minds, a lot of the corporate Democrats are saying, you know, maybe we should go with her instead of Joe. Just park Joe on the park bench there, give him some popcorn for the pigeons.
Harvey, can I say something about Elizabeth Warren?
Please.
She just introduced a bill that defunds the wall, our border wall, right? Stop the illegal immigrants, and put that into the coronavirus and research and testing. It's a brilliant bill. I know her quite well. I worked with her in Congress when we did a hearing together on the unbelievable amount of people who were going bankrupt every year because of you know, medical bills. And she was, you know, she was very warm and very nice. And she, the bill that John Conyers and I co-drafted Medicare for All, HR 676, she was running on it. Then she got a lot of blowback from corporate Democrats, and she decided to take that bill back. But I have to give her props for introducing this bill, and it should be a bill that progressives should really get behind. And hopefully, whoever is the next president, it'll be interesting. It'll be a true test. If Biden gets elected, a true test of whether or not he is a true progressive, or is he a corporate Democrat, or more of a moderate Republican, does he keep the wall up, or does he blow it up and take it down?
That's an interesting question. And I got to say that I have a gut sense that Joe Biden is not going to be the nominee. Now, you know, I don't think it's going to be Bernie either. You know, there's three basic categories people are talking about electability. One, can a woman win? Well, what woman already won, for God's sakes? I mean, Hillary Clinton won by 3 million votes, and she was a horrible candidate. She campaigned like Marie Antoinette, for God's sakes, and she still won the election. And if she had followed Bob Fitrakis' advice in Michigan and Wisconsin and done the challenges, she might actually overturn those two states. Then the question is, can a gay guy win? I don't think so. I mean, Buttigieg, I'm amazed at how far Buttigieg got. I thought he was also a miserable candidate. Didn't like him at all personally, but, you know, the era has come when a gay guy can run. But I don't think a gay guy can get elected president. And even less than a gay guy, I don't think a Jewish guy can get elected. Not many people have talked about that. But, you know, we know that if Bernie had gotten the nomination, every other word out of Donald Trump's mouth would have been dirty Jew. I mean, you know, in the very many ways that he, in his inimical fashion, could blow that dog whistle. But a woman can get elected. We elected a woman already, for God's sakes. And I just have a gut sense, you heard it here first, that Joe Biden is not going to be the nominee. It won't be Bernie either. It'll be somebody else who might be less than 77 years old. I know that's a major leap forward. But, Bob, what are you predicting for the Ohio primary here? Uh-oh. Oh, God, we're done. Oh, my God. Hey, thanks,
all right.
Guys. We'll be back. You'll see.
I think Bob Biden takes it.
You think you get betting on Biden? All right. We'll talk to you next time, guys. Take care.
Right.
Thank you, New York.
Thank you.
Next week in Solartopia.
Solartopia. Solartopia. Solartopia.